Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 Radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinosa, with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. Opening and closing narration is provided by Gene Brister. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now, let's join our co-hosts, Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley, for today's program.
Hello, Imperial Valley. Welcome to your weekly wellness radio show. Let's Talk About It. This program is brought to you as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health. I'm your host for Let's Talk About It, Patricia Revalocaro. If you'd like to listen to one of our shows or share a podcast, we would love for you to have to do that. Just go to kxoradio.com and go to the Let's Talk About It and Expressate links on the right side of the page, and you can search for a show of interest to you. Our radio show calendars are posted on our county website, which is bhs.imperialcounty.org. And you can also get a link there to the different podcasts that we have available. If you'd like to reach out to us, ask us a question, maybe suggest a radio show, you can reach out to us at our email, which is wellnessradio@co.imperial.ca.us. And as always, we have lots of community service offerings, and some of them are training courses, which we have the Mental Health First Aid, Youth Mental Health First Aid, the Assist, and the Safe Talk. And we'd love to have you come and join one of our classes anytime that you have available time. So today we have the pleasure of having Kristen Magana, and she is a program supervisor for the Substance Use Disorder Clinic. And hopefully she and I will be able to get through all the different programs that they have to offer for the kids that are, I say kids, the youth that are the ages of 12 to 18. So in their program, they provide quality professional services on an outpatient basis. And like I mentioned, to 12 to 18 year olds who have a substance use disorder. Their clinic is open from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and closed on holidays. And they have a variety of services, which we're hoping, like I said, to get through to assist them in assist the youth in the improvement of their daily functioning, to help achieve independence, and to reintegrate back into the community. The SUT program has doctors who specialize in addiction medicine. They have therapists, SUD counselors, and nursing staff who are also trained in SUD treatment. And like I said, we have the pleasure of having Kristen Magana, and she has been a program supervisor for the adolescent El Centro and Calexico clinics, big commute every day for her. And she's also one of the co-trainers for the nonviolent crisis intervention with me. So Kristen and I have the opportunity to train every once in a while, which is always fun. So welcome, Kristen. Thank you so much for being a guest today, taking time out of your schedule to come over and talk to us about the SUD services that Imperial County Behavioral Health and Substance Use Disorders Programs has to offer.
Hi, Patricia. Thank you for having me. It's really great to be here. I think this is maybe the fourth or fifth time I've done the radio show. First time with you. I'm very excited, though, to be here, as always, to talk about services and just to talk about things in general that the community should be aware of.
Yeah, maybe we should switch roles. you're an old pro at this now, so that's awesome. I guess you were here with Scott Dudley, who's a previous host of Let's Talk About It. So, thank you for coming back. And, you know, we really want to talk about the Substance Use Disorder Program and the services that you guys have to offer, because you guys have a boatload of stuff. You know, people say the Imperial Valley is small and whatever, but we are up to par with big cities in the amount of services that we have to offer. We have a lot of caring staff. You know, our staff is always out in the community. Your substance use disorder community service workers are always out there, you know, telling people about the program, making people aware. You've got lots of great staff that come out and you know, are always present. at schools, at events, at the mall, you know, wherever they're needed, they're there, you know, and it's really great to see everybody. So kind of what we'd like to know, we want to talk about all the services, and maybe if there's a way that we could start off at the beginning. Like if a person comes in and we just kind of want to, you know, make sure that they know about all the services, like, you know, they come in for an assessment and counseling and medication support and all those different kinds of things. So is there a way that maybe you could walk us through, you know, the number that they would call and how to come in and start so that we can show what a well-rounded client all the services that they are eligible for?
Right, that's a great question and probably the perfect place to start. So we really try to make it as easy as possible to get into services. So there's a couple of different ways this can happen. And one of the most frequent ways and the most common ways is via the schools. So we do have staff at 10 plus different schools throughout the Imperial County and Juvenile Hall. And one of the biggest ways or the most common ways people come into services is via the school system. And this can happen whether it be an adolescent gets caught using drugs at school, gets caught under the influence at school, is even associated maybe with people who have got caught. We have the administrators send in referrals to our department, and this could be done via paper, it could be fax, emailed. And then what the staff will do once we get those referrals is we send the counselors out to the schools where that would start. And like I said, that's just one way. We also work with probation a lot. Probation send referrals based off of their clients' needs. And if they see a need for substance use disorder counseling, they can send a referral as well. We will go into juvenile hall. We do Zoom sessions, but we can also go in person. And then there's our clinics. We do have two clinics, one in Calexico, one in El Centro, and they are physical clinics that you can actually walk into. So whether it's a call, whether it's walking in, we try to make it so you can be seen, you know, wherever you are, whatever meets your needs the best. We also offer telehealth. So if maybe you can't do in person, we do Zoom appointments as well. So we do try to make this as flexible as possible. Like I said, as the goal is to have as many people come in as possible and create, you know, take down some of those barriers that we may see. The first thing that always happens after when you come in to see us is you get what's called our screening. It is about an hour and a half appointment. And what happens is we have a substance use disorder counselor speak with the adolescent and really just try to get a baseline of what their history is, maybe what current use is, what's going on in their lives, so we can really get them enrolled in the services. So from there, we can go to a few different places. You can do a group or individual session. We do also have bilingual counselors. Most of my staff is bilingual in both El Centro and Calexico, which I think is really amazing. Our groups consist of people anywhere from 2 to 12 people in a group. And like I said, that's just an option. We do also have individual counseling as well. We do also offer family counseling. So after that screening is we really try to see what will work best for you in treatment, whether it be a group at the school, a group at the clinic, individual services, and then you'll start your treatment services with us. And that's where we get you on a schedule. Typically, we like to see you once or twice a week, and you meet with either a substance use disorder counselor or we have our behavioral health therapists. The behavioral health therapists are master level therapists, and they can provide therapy and assessments. And they also do some of the counseling sessions. And our substance use disorder counselors are registered or certified counselors and will also do counseling sessions as well. Our therapists have a little bit higher education level, and the only difference is they can actually do assessments and some of the more intensive therapy, or the substance use disorder counselors do more of the general therapy or group counseling and not therapy. So, you know, you from your that screening, you go, like I said, we try to get you into services ASAP, so there's no lapse in time. We want to get you in quickly. We want to make sure that we start seeing you as soon as possible. From there, after you start getting in services, like I said, you can have an individual appointment, a group appointment, and you'll also end up getting an assessment done. An assessment's always done with one of our behavioral health therapists, and that goes a little bit more in depth. There's a little bit more, we call it a biopsychosocial aspect to it, where we delve a little bit deeper into questions, a little bit more about your history, really see. Try to see what else we can do to help you out. We do a lot of referrals to mental health or to other agencies. So if during our assessment we see that, hey, you know what, maybe this person would benefit from mental health, we do make those connections and refer people out as needed as well. So from there, the assessment really establishes what we call your level of care, or how frequently we should be seeing you and the intensity of which we see you. So from that assessment, that's where we really kind of hone in on, okay, so what are our goals? How long are we going to see you, or how frequently are we going to see you? And really try to target treatment a little bit more and set our goals. And from there, it really just depends on the individual. All of our treatment is unique to the individual. We try to really make sure treatment is based on that individual's needs and what will work best for them. So we do have a variety of services, like you said. The counseling is done on an outpatient basis and is all through behavioral health. We do actually have some services that we have contract for that we can't provide in the Valley. One of the bigger ones, and that a lot of people don't know about, is our residential services. So, because we are a rather rural community, we don't have residential services available. Residential services used to be formerly known as detox or rehab, as they used to call it. We now refer to that more so as residential services. We don't have that locally, but we do have, as an agency, as we've contracted with the provider in Tarzana, California. So if we have someone who meets that level of care need and has parental involvement and is willing to go, we can actually send them to this residential facility. And it is contracted with us. It is, drug Medi-Cal certified. It is, we've sent minors there before. And they can stay anywhere from 30 to 90 days, depending on their treatment needs. And we also provide transportation, like I said a little bit earlier, about, really taking away barriers and making this as easy as possible for everyone. We also provide transportation. So we do know that parents work, guardians work, they're scheduling, and that can be a burden on the family or the client themselves. So we try to eliminate that by offering transport as well. So we do offer transport to appointments, we offer transport to the residential facilities, and really just try to make sure that the clients can see us and we can see them regardless of what's going on in their home life or, anything else.
That's really important because, like you said, transportation, it's far, and people might not even have a car that to get them up there. And then you guys take responsibility and to get them to where they need to be, and then bring them back home to to back to the Imperial Valley. So that really eases up a lot for the parent and for the guardian or whoever. The foster parent, whoever is taking care of these kids, or I keep saying kids, of these youth. And it's really important because that's a big financial burden that's taken off the legal guardian. And you mentioned something earlier. You said that the youth that are ages 12 to 18 can get the help that they need or request services at the school. So how does that work? I mean, and if you, I don't know if you can, if you can mention the schools that you guys are in right now.
Right. So it depends on the school. So some of the schools have FRCs, and for the schools that do have FRCs, you could typically go in there, and this would be like Brawley High School. They have an FRC center, and we actually have some of our mental health and substance use disorder counterparts in there. It's really nice for the students because it's a very inclusive area where they can go and request services. So there is a liaison in there. And, if you want to, you can go through her. Most of the counselors at the schools will be able to link you back to us. We also work with ICOE. They have counselors as well at most of the schools. So we meet with ICOE. We're trying to do it once a year, approximately. We just started this past year because there's a lot of grants where we have a lot of counselors going into the school, a lot of people trying to help. So whether it be going to the school counselor, whether it be going to the counselor from ICOE, the liaison, the FRC liaison, at any point in time, any of those people on the campus should be able to and should be knowledgeable about how to write a referral and how to, connect you to services on that campus. Also, it doesn't need to be from someone. You can call in yourself and request services. So you don't have to necessarily go to someone at the school. If you would rather call our offices and call us and say, hey, you know what, I want to be a part of services. I go to this school. You have the option of, like I said, we'll tell you, we can see you at the school at this time, or if you want to, you can come into the clinic. So you don't have to even have someone refer you. You don't have to wait on the paperwork from someone else. If you yourself want to call in, even as an adolescent, and say, hey, I think I might need some help, we'll be more than happy to set up an appointment for you, like I said, whether it be at the office or at the school, and we'll make sure that you get seen. And that's one of the big things. So I always tell adults, adolescents, is this is all voluntary. So one of the things that we've seen happen is parents call to refer their children, and they tell us, you know, I saw or I found a vape in my child's room. I want them to get counseling. And we always tell them, you know what, we're more than happy to make an appointment. We're more than happy to see the adolescent. However, this is voluntary. You can't force counseling. So if your child comes in here and tells us, I don't want to do this, we have to respect that because you can't force counseling on anyone. So we do take the time to educate the guardians, the adults, you know, just pretty much everyone we come in contact with, because it's not a very common thing people know about, but adolescents do have rights. They have rights over their health records and over their mental health and substance use disorder health records. So we do take that time to educate, you know, the parent, the guardians. We do outreach as well. So I know I do presentations. I have other staff who do presentations. And we really make sure to try to educate both clients and adolescents and adults alike. Like, as an adolescent, you do have control of your health record. You can, if you come to see us, and we always encourage parental and guardian involvement because having the support system is very key in recovering. So we encourage that support system and we encourage involvement. However, if the adolescent is fearful that they're going to get in trouble or get reprimanded, and that's going to hinder their participation in the program, they're entitled to counseling without that parental involvement. So we can still see them. We will still provide counseling. The only difference is we can't provide transport if they don't have parental or guardian involvement, because we can't pick someone up from their house without, you know, letting their parent or guardian know where we're taking them. But they can still receive counseling. So at our school sites, a lot of the time, we do have adolescents whose parents don't always know that they're enrolled in the program. And when, you know, I do get a little bit of discourse with this because it's a very sensitive topic as substance use is. And I always try to tell people, you know, it sounds a little off-putting, but the purpose of the, you know, legal and laws around this is really to encourage people to get help. So if the clients, if these adolescents think we're going to tell everything with probation and tell everything to the parents, they wouldn't disclose anything to us. We're really trying to help them, and we can only help them if we really know what's going on. So with these laws in place, the kids actually are able to disclose a lot more information to us, and we're able to really help them through some of the problems they have without the fear on their end of getting in trouble, of there being these negative repercussions. So consent, you know, we call it minor consent. 42 CFR Part 2 is a law that's particularly applicable to our substance use disorder services. With COVID, a lot of people got familiar with HIPAA, but 42 CFR Part 2 is even more stringent than HIPAA. So, like I said, it's something particular to substance use disorder services, and that is, you know, what we adhere to. So we really try to educate, like I said, the community, the clients, the parents. The whole purpose of this treatment is so someone can get better in a very accepting environment. We will, like I said, always encourage parental involvement, encourage a support system. But if the client believes that, you know, at that one point in time, they would not like it, we still offer counseling, but we do encourage that throughout treatment so we can, you know, work towards a place of having that support system involved.
That's really important. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the confidentiality because substance use disorder services are confidential along with mental health services. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, that's one of the things they don't want to seek services because one, they figure, oh, man, this is a valley so small. I know the person who works there and, you know, I don't want them knowing this. No, I mean, we can't talk about anything that happens. You know, it's like what happens here stays here kind of thing. And you know, we want to stress that our services are totally confidential. I mean, there can be repercussions against us if we divulge any information, and we do want to make sure. The other thing that you mentioned is minor consent, and that's really important because sometimes, you know, parents for whatever reason are not available or whatever. And the kids have, there I go again, and the youth have the ability to go to the school and seek this treatment. So, if a parent is like, say, working or something like that, and maybe not able to get off work or works far away, the minor can go into the school and get the services that they need and that they want. And it's a big help to a parent, and it's a big help to the minor so that they can get the services that they need and that they want. That's just awesome to me because you take away any kind of barriers that would be there in order to seek services. And that's just so totally awesome because there's enough barriers to seeking service, and you guys are just kind of chipping away at any barrier that anybody has and making your services readily available. The other thing, you had mentioned counseling. Kind of what does that consist of? What is, you said mentioned you have individual counseling, you have group counseling. Kind of what does that look like?
So counseling, again, we try to be as flexible as possible. So counseling, typically, we like it to be at least an hour a week. Our group sessions are typically an hour and a half, but because we do try to accommodate school schedules, we don't want the kids to miss class. We typically try to do group sessions during what they call tutorial or prep classes during when we're in the high schools. We don't want them to miss those core classes. So it can range anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, typically. Sometimes we do shorten it to an hour so they're missing less class. And our clinic sessions go from 4 to 5, and we do that so if you're coming from a different area, you can't come, you don't want to miss class. You can actually come after your school day and come to the clinic from 4 to 5. And what a group session will consist of is we do have different modalities. We are behavioral health is really focused on providing evidence-based services, meaning that the type of counseling we do has some research behind it. There's a structure to it, and there's proof that, if they go through this type of counseling, that there will be a positive outcome at the end. So we do offer different types of modalities of counseling. Like I said, some of our more frequent with our substance use department, it's called the Matrix and Seeking Safety. We use those the most frequently. They are evidence-based, and in group settings, there's typically a worksheet, an introduction, discussion, and they go over really similar like lessons, and they really try to make sure that the adolescents are relaying the messages and what they're learning to their everyday life. A lot of discussion, and like I said, that can be between 2 to 12 people. And then on our individual sessions, again, they can range anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and a half, just really depending on what's going on. And you'll get a one-on-one counseling session. So we have had adolescents, maybe especially some that are, we call dual diagnosed, they're suffering from mental health and substance use issues. If they have really high anxiety, they don't want to be in a group, and so that setting isn't for them. So at that point, we will have individuals. Or if something happens and someone has a really significant event that they really want some additional counseling on, they can ask for an individual on top of the group counseling sessions, and certain issues can be addressed during those sessions. And the individual sessions, they usually tend to dig a little bit deeper. They do get a little bit more detailed just because it is just you and at that point a counselor or a therapist. So it really just depending, I think, on personality and the client. It's really up to them where they would make, the most improvement. Sometimes it's a combination of both. We do have some adolescents coming to both group and individual counseling sessions. And, they like the group setting. Most of our adolescents really love the groups, and they prefer the groups because they find people with common issues. They feel like they're not alone. They're experiencing the same things, and they really like having that group setting where they can have these discussions with each other, and it's not in a scared and hush-hush nature. It can be very open. So we have seen that the adolescents do particularly really like our group settings, and that seems to be one of their preferred methods. And like I said, now if they have maybe an additional issue that comes up, they do request the individuals. One of the other things that we try to offer to encourage our adolescents to come in is we offer a lot of snacks. I think food is always a big driving factor for anyone. You tell someone a snack's going to be at a meeting, they're a lot happier to go to that meeting when they know there's going to be food there. The same for adolescents. So we also offer chips, drinks, waters, Gatorades, food. We have pizza pockets, chicken bakes. So we really try to make our settings as comfortable as possible because, like I always tell people, it's a very substance use disorder and mental health. These are very triggering words. They have they're words that unfortunately have really negative stigma to them a lot of the time. So we really try to remove barriers, remove stigma, and make it a very open, space so people can feel as comfortable as possible.
You know, that's awesome because, if a kid comes to your group or to an individual session after school, they're probably famished. And so you meet yet another need, because, some when you're hungry, sometimes you're not able to really listen or pay attention and stuff like that. So that's yet another box that you check for these folks so that they can feel comfortable and willing to come in and meet you with you guys or meet with the counselors for their session. So I think this is a really good spot to take a short break. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a short intermission and we will be right back with Kristen Magana from Imperial County Behavioral Health Substance Use Disorders Program.
Let's talk about it. Bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back, Imperial Valley. Thank you for coming back and joining us. We have the pleasure of speaking with Kristen Magana today, and she is a supervisor, program supervisor for adolescent services for Imperial County Behavioral Health Substance Use Disorder Programs, and she oversees both the Calexico and the El Centro Clinic. So if you missed the first segment, please go back to KXO Radio and look at it. We talked a lot about the services that are offering, and we just touched on some of the services. So I think that now on this second segment, we'd like to talk a little bit about medication support and the medication support services that Substance Use Disorders programs offer to its clients.
Right. And, with substance use disorders, I think medication is something that's very important. We don't see it as much in our adolescents as we do in our adult population, but it's still something that creates, fills a much needed piece with, that goes along with counseling as well. So for medication in adolescents, we do typically need a guardian or parent involved. And I say typically because historically that's what was the trend coming up until the end of last year. So in both mental health and substance use, the overarching kind of ruling rule of thumb was you can get counseling without parental or guardian involvement. However, medication was reserved for someone who has parent or guardian involvement. Now, in about October of last year, they actually had a new assembly bill that went into place. It was Assembly Bill 816. And it was very unprecedented as it allows minors 16 and over to get Suboxone treatment, which is treatment for opioid use disorder, medication for that without parental involvement. So this was really done in response to the opioid epidemic and unfortunately, fentanyl and a lot of these things that we've seen so much over the past 3 to 5 years, to really try to, again, encourage treatment. So at this point in time with adolescents, if they are seeking or if they are having withdrawals from opioids and need Suboxone, which is a type of medication that will treat withdrawals, they can actually get that without parental involvement if they are 16 years of age or older. So that is the only medication that they can do that with. And like I said, this is something fairly new, something that, like I said, very unprecedented. And I think even for all of us that are in the industry, when this kind of happened, we were very shocked and surprised because this isn't something we've really seen before, but something that's much needed, again, due to the opioid epidemic. So with Suboxone, that in of itself, 16 years old and older, we can prescribe. However, with all our other medications for adolescents, you can be younger, but you need a parent or guardian involvement to get that medication. So we do have medication. Our most common ones are for alcohol use disorder. So we do treat that. We also treat, like I said, the opioid use disorder, have medications for that. And we also have what's called withdrawal management. So if you are suffering from withdrawals from any of these, different types of drugs, we'll actually see you in one of the clinics. There are doctors, nurses, there's a little sitting room where they can administer different types of medication. I have to say most of our doctors have worked with our adolescents are very, I've heard, nothing but great feedback from our clients in regards to our doctors and nurses. And it's just something, like I said, we've seen help tremendously. And I always, people are always shocked kind of when I talk about this with the adolescents and the medication, because they go, is that really necessary? Like, they're so young. And I have to say, unfortunately, at this point, with everything that's happened and all the new drugs that have come out, it's very necessary and it's very helpful. We have had one of the ones that always comes to mind when I think of this is we had an adolescent. He was, I believe, 16 or 17, and he was using fentanyl 6 to 7 days a week. And, this was in the past couple years, and he went on medication. His parents were involved with his treatment. He did go on medication and he's clean now. He's sober now and he hasn't used, so he's doing really well. I can still remember to this day the first person that we actually, the first minor adolescent that we did put on Suboxone was a 16-year-old. Again, they were involved in the justice system though, so they were actually in juvenile hall. So we can do this in a variety of settings as well, whether you're in our outpatient setting where we see you at our clinics, whether you are in juvenile hall, because we do, like I said, provide services juvenile hall. We do try to make it as seamless as possible. If we have someone who is, in the school system and violates probation or gets put in juvenile hall, we will go into juvenile hall. We try to make sure there's no lapse in services. And we try to make sure services are very consistent. We've worked with the nurses in juvenile hall to both it to, if they need to administer the medication, whether it's something they could administer or whether the probation officers themselves actually bring the adolescents to our clinics to have our doctors administer the medication. We've done both. So yeah, it's something that I think was at the I we when we started about 6-ish years ago, 6, 7 years ago, it was something that hadn't been done before. And like I said, we don't see it as much with the adolescents as we do with the adult population, but it is something we've done and we can do if and when needed. So we do have, like I said, a really good relationship with probation. We do enjoy, working with juvenile hall officers, the probation officers. We do get releases of information. So again, treatment doesn't stop just because maybe a youth does get detained or put in juvenile hall.
That's really important because, you need that continuation of medication so that you have continuity of care. And just because you're incarcerated or you're in a locked facility doesn't mean you can't continue to get the care that you need because they need that support, That's just awesome. One more thing that you guys are doing to help people get well. And so the other thing that we needed to talk about is maybe crisis intervention. What support you guys do or what you guys help when a person needs or is in a crisis situation, maybe needs help being stabilized or providing service in the least intensive level of care.
Right, and that's always the goal, is to have them in the least intensive level of care where they're still going to make progress, but where they're not restricted. So as far as our crisis services, this is something that we can really do anywhere at any given time. So we've had multiple throughout the years, various situations. We've had them in school settings where an adolescent was having, a crisis episode and where our staff have had to de-escalate. We've had, I remember one of the first, it was coming off of COVID. We had a adolescent who was doing a telephone session with the counselor, and the counselor was trilling, or our system where we could message people, and it's kind of encrypted and we don't have to worry about, was letting me know, hey, like, I'm on the phone with this person, I'm de-escalating, but I'm still worried. And I was able to have a welfare visit done. So I called to make sure, a welfare visit was done on the adolescent and that everything was fine. So whether it's, at a school, at a home, in the clinic, we very much have had experience de-escalating those crisis situations. It's something that if I think if you're in the industry, with mental health, substance use, for a given amount of time, you're going to experience at one point or another. And we've always been able to really do well with the situation, de-escalate. The other thing we do, and I really like, is we work with some of our other mental health counterparts a lot. So our triage unit has a crisis mobile unit, and that's something that we've had experience with multiple times, where if we call PD, PD will tap into the crisis unit, or we've really utilized that section as well. So utilizing some of our counterparts in those circumstances has been very critical to positive outcomes. And that's something that also kind of just with years of experience in implementing all these new programs, we've really learned to like reach out with to each other in those moments of need when we do need that, when we need the additional support, when the client needs the additional support, and really making sure that everyone is there and at the right time, at the right place, so that the client can have a positive outcome from the situation.
That's super important, because a lot of times, you know, people don't have positive outcomes and they don't get the services, or at least they feel that they don't get the services that they need. And you guys are right there, you know, helping them out and stuff like that. Just like, you know, being there is so important. You know, your services, our crisis services, we're there to help the people kind of get through that little valley that they're experiencing and kind of get them back up to speed. And that's really awesome, because it really helps when you see a familiar face. You know, your counselor is there at the other end trying to give you crisis intervention services. Because a lot of times, if you have to explain your whole story to somebody else, it just sometimes is not the best situation. But, you know, to see the familiar face, to see that the counselors are there, to see that the people that they see in the clinic, that's just terrific, because it just kind of, it makes you feel a little bit better about the situation, you know. And crisis situation is hard as it is, you know. Nobody wants to be in that position. So, you know, for you guys to be there and offer all the support that you possibly can is just awesome.
Right. And then also just with, you know, as I mentioned, working with other units, one of the other units we really enjoy working with, and I think makes a huge difference, is our pet outreach unit. And whenever I talk about services, I always have to bring up pet, because I think it's everyone's favorite, including the staff's, 110% that we do, you know, work with the pet engagement unit, which essentially is a counterpart in our mental health and the outreach department, where we work with dogs from the Humane Society. There's handlers and trainers. And when we're doing outreach, and even when we do our groups in the clinic, I think it's every Thursday in my El Centro clinic, we have them come. And so they bring a dog with them, like I said, and they have a handler and a trainer, and they're all bound by 42 CFR2 and confidentiality and all that good stuff. So they actually come though to our groups, and it helps a little bit just with bringing everyone's kind of stress level down. And they always come like 10 minutes before group, which is nice, because I think it helps with us as well as the staff. We all get super excited to see the animals. And it's amazing to have, you know, the animals there and just have a little bit of a mental, you know, like break and like decompress and pet the dog. And, you know, I just think that's always one of the best things, most like innovative, like, you know, I know it was a innovative project that kind of ended up sticking around. And I think that's been everyone's favorite, just like I said, by far. Even when we do outreach, we do some of the stuff we do outreach as well. They do resource tables and resource fairs and go out to the schools. They always try to pair with the pet program, because the engagement is always so much higher. Because like I said, talking about mental health, talking about substance use disorders, it's very nerve-wracking, it's very nervous, it's not a comfortable conversation to have, but when there's something to kind of take your mind off of it, it becomes a lot easier. So I know when we go to the schools to do our resource tables, that we try, like I said, to partner with the pet program, and that always brings the engagement way, way up when we have them. So like I said, just we really try to, like I said, we work with, you know, triage, we work with the pet program, and really just making the most of it, because like I said, these are hard topics to talk about. These are hard topics that can get deep and get emotional, and they aren't always, you know, super fun and uplifting, because they're hard things to go through. But when, you know, you have something there like a cute dog, it makes it just a little bit easier to relax and to feel comfortable around someone. Like you were saying, you know, sometimes you have to tell the same story three times to three different people, and that can get very frustrating. And at least if there's a cute dog sitting next to you that you get to pet, it makes a world of difference, because it takes a little bit of your mind off of that. So like I said, also the pet program, and, you know, whenever we talk about, or whenever we do meetings with like outside agencies and things like that, that's always something I bring up. And I always put pictures of them in our PowerPoints that we do, because like I said, I just think that garners the best response from everyone. And I think that that's something that's made also a big difference with our outreach. In fact, I think most of the community service workers I have tell me like they rather work with pet, because the engagement from people is just so much more than if they're not there. It makes such a huge difference. So we really do try to, like I said, make it as easy and utilize all our resources here, you know, even just within behavioral health, to make sure we're getting the most out of all our services and all our outreach that we really can.
And you know, that's a program that's very near and dear to my heart, because my dog Betty was one of the first dogs of the pet program, and she used to do Zoom, you know, when they were doing telehealth. And our radio show producer, Eric, he adopted a dog also from the pet program, Austin. And sometimes they come out of retirement and they go, you know, work again, you know, work in quotations. But because it is, and sometimes, you know, people say, oh, you didn't bring the dogs? You didn't bring the dogs? And it's like, we're there. It's like, oh, okay. You know, and it's true. It just kind of helps ease, and kind of, you know, when you're feeling kind of stressed, to pet the dog. There's been so many studies on that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's great to have them there and have them available. And, you know, it is awesome. It's an awesome program, and kind of digress, but it's a good digression. if we can talk just a teeny tiny bit about the services that you have at Juvenile Hall, the counseling, the screening, and all the care coordination and stuff that you do. I think that what we'll do is we'll talk about it in the next segment, just a teeny tiny bit at the beginning of our next segment. So with that, Imperial Valley, please join us for our next segment, and we'll talk about the services that we offer at Juvenile Hall. We're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, please feel free to call 760-482-4000. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXOradio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back, Imperial Valley. We have Kristen Magana, and she is a program supervisor for both the El Centro and the Calexico Adolescent Substance Use Disorder Program with Imperial County Behavioral Health. And, you know, we have had a really interesting show talking a lot about the services that our Substance Use Disorder Program for Adolescent has to offer to all the youth in Imperial Valley from ages 12 to 18. You know, we're offering services at our clinics, and we'll, at the end of this segment, she will give the contact information, but we offer services at our schools, at our clinics, and just making it easily available for all the folks that are 12 to 18, that so that they can access services if they need it for substance use disorder. So right before we took a break, we were starting to talk about juvenile hall services. So if you want to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into harm reduction, because that's an awesome thing. So,
right. So we do have a long-standing and a very good relationship with both probation and juvenile hall. And it's something that's really critical for, you know, the adolescents here in Imperial County. So whether someone, we get a referral from someone who is currently in juvenile hall, and we can start the process while they're in juvenile hall, or they're outside of juvenile hall and then go in, like I said, we really try to make sure there's no lapse in care. We do not do group counseling in juvenile hall. We only do at this point in time individual counseling in juvenile hall, but we do have those individual services available. We also have offered and have, you know, had adolescents that have been on medication in juvenile hall as well, and make sure that we work with the juvenile hall staff, like I said, as well as the nurses inside of juvenile hall, to make sure medication is administered appropriately and provided on an ongoing basis without interruption. All of these things, of course, are done with releases of information in place. So that's something I know we talked a little bit earlier about, minor consent and having releases. And again, that's one of those things where we can actually allow kids to really be open with us without any fear of, like I said, those negative repercussions. So when we have our releases of information, when they are on medication in juvenile hall, we do need them for both juvenile hall staff, because the juvenile hall staff are the ones who run the facility, typically probation and their probation officer, and then also the medical staff as well. The medical staff are contracted, so they're separate from the juvenile hall staff, so it gets a little convoluted and there's a lot of paperwork, but we make sure and get everything done, and we really just make sure that, like I said, the adolescent can still receive the proper care and treatment while in juvenile hall. And with these releases of information, it's important to note that they can be limited, meaning we can disclose that a client is having services with us and attending services, but we don't necessarily tell the probation officer or juvenile hall staff why they're with us or what their diagnosis is or what they discuss with us during treatment. All of that is, can be off limits, but they do obviously know where we're coming from because we have to check in when we come, when we go into juvenile hall, and they know who we are. And like I said, they know that we're there to see someone, but the details of those visits are and can be kept very much confidential, even in those settings, which is, again, as I feel like, very necessary for treatment. So these adolescents can talk to us, they let us know, so we can actually get to the bottom of, the reason why they're using and really have these discussions without a fear of that information being shared. And I know we also have our mental health counterparts as well that go into juvenile hall. So when our adolescents are in juvenile hall, they can receive services for both their mental health and substance use disorder while in juvenile hall without that being an issue. And that's always something, like I said, I think it's very important. We have a referral system in place. We have, monthly meetings with the juvenile hall and probation supervisors and managers, so we can make sure we're all on the same page. And we make sure and keep that open communication. So again, all in the best interest of the client and the adolescent to get them that coordinated care as best as possible.
And that's really great because that continuity of care means a lot. You don't want anybody to lapse in their treatment and have to get restarted on medications or have an issue with medications for being abruptly withdrawn, which is not a good thing either. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is harm reduction. That is a really hot topic, and I know that you have a wealth of knowledge, so I won't even try to get into it. I will just let you take it from here and talk to us about harm reduction.
Right. Harm reduction is a huge part of what we do here at Behavioral Health, especially within our substance use disorder program. It's something we are very focused on. So harm reduction is really centered around making sure the way I explain it to people is I don't want people to die. I want people to live. I want people to have the next day of their life. So we do this in various ways. It can be very, very daunting for someone who uses substances to say, we expect you to go sober tomorrow. If you're someone who is using any type of substance, even if it's smoking a cigarette or, drinking, whatever it is, 7 days a week, and you say to them, you should be sober tomorrow because you had counseling today, that is a very daunting, thought to them. So what we work on, we call it harm reduction, meaning really lessening the frequency and the intensity of the substances they're using with the goal of hopefully that getting down to zero. But really, if we what we something typically that we see is with the adolescents who are using the wax pens or vaping, I wake up every morning, and every morning when I before school, I, 7 days a week, every day, no matter what, I'm using my wax pen. I'm like, well, how about like you think maybe we get down to 5 days a week? And how about not using it before school because you're late every day and your grades are suffering? Like, maybe can you wait till after school? And really, what we call where the harm reduction comes in is mitigating that harm that that substance is doing. If they're mixing, we really educate them on the importance of not mixing drugs and how lethal that can be, and really giving them that education. We, really want to make sure, like I said, my thing is I just want people to live. I want to make sure we have these people here. I don't want any more deaths in the valley. I don't want there to be any more overdoses. I don't want there to be, anything like that. So one of the bigger things we offer with harm reduction too is Narcan. So in our SUD clinics for both adults and adolescents, we were lucky enough to get something called a Narcan distribution grant through our amazing analysts. They help us do all the paperwork because it's always a ton of paperwork, a ton of writing, and then a ton of reporting on how what we do with all this stuff. But so what that grant allowed us to do is we now have Narcan in our clinic. So whether you're a client or someone from the community, if you walk into any one of our substance use disorder clinics, you can say you need Narcan. And then for those of you that don't know, Narcan is the it is almost like a nasal spray, and it reverses opioid overdoses. And it's very important to note that it will only reverse an opioid overdose, not other overdoses. So if someone overdoses on alcohol, It will not fix that, but in the case of opioid overdoses such as heroin and fentanyl, it can and will, reverse that type of overdose. And it's really, so it's a nasal spray. It's really just like almost a single-use nasal spray, and or similar to a single-use nasal spray, and anyone could administer it. And that's also something people are very unfamiliar with, is you don't need to be a medical professional to administer Narcan. Anyone can administer Narcan. There are no adverse side effects. So if you see someone who passes out and you give them Narcan, but let's say they passed out due to alcohol overdose and not to an opioid overdose, it will not have a negative effect on them. You won't be hurting them by giving them Narcan. And Narcan is legal to have on you, whether you're an adult or adolescent. So we have had adolescents come into our clinics and request Narcan, and we do give it to them, and we can give Narcan without parental involvement, without parental or guardianship knowledge of it. And it is legal for these adolescents to have. And like you said, harm reduction is really something that is embedded in all of our services in the substance use disorder department, because we want people to be as safe as possible, because we want people to live to see the next day, to come to our counseling sessions, to hopefully eventually be sober. But like I said, when you have had a lifetime full of trauma and substance use, that thought of just going sober immediately is very, very scary. So we really do our best to implement harm reduction, like I said, in various ways. Like I said, a lot of patient education, a lot of Narcan distribution. We also have harm reduction kits. We do have a grant that something called the Youth Opioid Response Grant, also known as the YOR grant. And we're on our, I believe, third round of this grant. And it's something that has enabled us to do some things like we now have harm reduction kits. And this directly came out of this grant. And a harm reduction kit is it's a bag, it's a silver bag, and it includes gloves, it includes band-aids, it includes alcohol pads, and it also includes Narcan. And I believe, was it tissues? There was one other thing in there. And it's like I said, the bag, it's silver. You can't see through it, so you can't necessarily see what's inside. You can't necessarily see what's inside of it, but we can give this, and we do give this to both clients who are in need of it, who request it. And this came directly out of the YOR grant, which is geared directly towards opioid use disorders and stimulant use disorders. And along, oh, the other thing that I forgot in it was the fentanyl testing strips. Testing strips are very important. And what they are these little strips that you essentially can crush a pill into a cap full, little size full of water, and you put the strip in it, and the strip will alert you and let you know if there's fentanyl in the pill that you are going to use. So this will make sure people don't overdose on fentanyl, make sure that they're not getting these pills that are laced, that are so common, unfortunately, now. And it is a really huge harm reduction tool that we've implemented that's come really directly out of this grant that we've been able to utilize the past couple years. So we've been able to really, like I said, disperse these things throughout the community, have these on hand to give to clients, make sure that people are aware that we have them, they know what they are, and just really do a whole lot of education. We also have been able to buy some hygiene products, like I said. So a lot of this has to do with outreach and really engagement and being in the community and making sure people know our services. So typically, whether it be our hygiene bags or our harm reduction kits, we do try to include brochures, treatment information. We work a lot with, I know, like I said, CCT. We've done a lot of event with you guys where we're out doing the homeless outreach, I think out in like Winter Haven, out here in Calexico, and really just trying to partner with everyone to get the information out, get the Narcan out where it needs to be, which is anywhere in the community. I know I've done presentations at a few schools, and I've had teachers ask me for Narcan after I've done my presentations at schools, and I've been able to provide those to teachers. ICOE also has this grant as well, and I know with a lot of the school with the schools that they're in charge of, like the Valley Academies in El Centro, Del Rio, Calexico Academy, they had a lot of their staff trained on how to administer Narcan and had that available on hand as well, and on campus in various locations. Just this past school year, I did an event with Southwest, and it was an outreach event in regards to fentanyl information. And it was myself. We had speakers from probation department. We actually had a family, someone of a family member who's people who have passed away from opioid overdose. And we were able to, you know, do that outreach into the community, and we had presentations at Southwest. So really, like I said, we really try to focus on harm reduction in by getting information out there and really making sure the community has the information of our services, who we are, what we do, what we can provide, and really getting things like that Narcan out there, making sure people know we have fentanyl testing strips, getting the testing strips out there, giving it to our adolescents and adults who need them. And really, just like I said, my main goal is always making sure that someone's alive the next day so they can come to treatment. Really, you know, making sure that we are able to spread all that information.
And that's super, super important. And you know, I carry a thing of Narcan in my purse, and I am the type of person that if I carry it, then I won't need it. If I don't have it, then I'm going to need it. So just a little bit of ounce of prevention, and that you guys are doing that for the folks in Imperial Valley and stuff, that's just terrific. Because one little nasal spray can save a life, you know. And you know, it's just terrific, all the things that you guys are doing for the folks here in the Imperial Valley. You know, we're getting close to the end of our show, and I do want to make sure that if folks between the age of 12 and 18, or the parents of folks between the ages of 12 and 18, want to get in contact with our substance use disorder program, they know how. And so, Kristen, if you could like give us names, phone numbers, and all the information that you have so people can contact you if they're in need of services.
Right. And so I know we talked a little bit about confidentiality earlier. So I want to make sure everyone knows again. I know Patricia said it earlier, but that everything is confidential. Information will not be released. I have said no to probation officers, teachers, principals, various other people before. So again, everything is very confidential. Everything will be kept in-house. There will be, you know, nothing will be given out going outwards unless it's with the clients. Okay. So I do, there are two clinics that you can go to, physical clinics. We have one in El Centro. It is located at 315 South Waterman Avenue in El Centro. And we are in the Valley Plaza. We were right next to, there's an IID, you know, on one side of us and kind of by the Quest. So we are across from there. And the phone number for the El Centro clinic is 442-265-7270. And like I said, you can walk in and request Narcan. You do not have to be a client of ours. Any member of the community can do that. And we also have a clinic in Calexico. The address for the clinic in Calexico is 101 Hacienda Drive, Suite B in Calexico. And we are in the Hacienda building next to Food for Less. There's a Subway, a Starbucks, Taco Bell, a really nice little location, nice parking lot, and all that. And the phone number is 442-265-6410. So you can call either one of those numbers, set up an appointment. If you have any questions, you can ask for me. My name is Kristen. I'm the program supervisor, and I am more than happy to do presentations, to educate, to answer any questions you may have in regards to treatment, any concerns you may have in regards to confidentiality. I'm always happy to really have that discussion with anyone from the general public, anyone who might have any questions just about treatment, you know, just, you know, anyone who has any questions at all, please feel free to call.
All right, thank you so much, Kristen. We're coming to the end of our show today. And thank you so much for all the information you've given us. Thank you for everything that you and your crew and even the folks at the adult substance use disorder programs do for our folks here in the Imperial Valley. We really want to thank you. And just remember that September is Recovery Month. And you know, just be aware and thank you so much. And thank you, Imperial Valley, for joining us for this episode of Let's Talk About It. Thank you. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230 and each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio under the direction of Mario Espinosa with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. Opening and closing narration is provided by Gene Brister. Co-hosts for tonight's program were Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Let's Talk About It brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. This program is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Leticia Plancarte, Garcia, Director.